It's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Profiles. I'm Paula Schiller, and in this program we'll hear more from the life and times of Emily Ivanoff Brown. Emily Brown is a writer, teacher, and visionary. She's a charming individual with a happily uncomplicated approach to life.
All natives are happy people because they have no money worrying inside of their little noodle. They're happy as long as they have food to eat and some clothing to wear and they're smiling all the time. Well, I'm not saying that when I get to my little room, I don't smile there because I have no one to smile with. I think that's why I'm happy when I see people anywhere I go. I love to be with people.
Emily Brown grew up liking people in the village of Unalakleet. We won't say how long ago, only that she has seen a lot of changes and has written about them in a book soon to be published called The Roots of Tikasuk. Tikasuk is Emily Brown's Inupiaq name. Her book, however, is more than just her family story.
The writer had to be put herself into it because I'm part of Unalakleet. And so that's how it is named, Roots of Tikasuk. It covers not just my family or others, you know, but then other, the Unalakleet itself, the history.
Mm-hmm. It talks about the changes that have happened that you've seen.
Yes, because of the changes we're going through, you know, the pressure psychologically, the pressure that other people give us. You'd be surprised how long you can stand that. I couldn't for a while when I first went out to the States. Your life is so scheduled you don't have time to be free for yourself. No freedom. Well, that's the reason people, especially in education field, they gave us 8 hours of sitting at our desk in all graded schools up to high school. They didn't give us freedom, and we just forgot our own culture because we were just like a little furniture. When they want to move us here, they moved us here. And so education is not basically conducted that way in your schools. You have other branches of fields to study. And our primary purpose when federal educated us was write, read, and that's it. Arithmetic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And many times the concepts were not understood until you got to the higher group, like in my case. Many things that I didn't understand in grammar and high school, when I came to college, it just opened my eyes. No wonder, you know. So we didn't have freedom. We need little freedom to express ourselves. Because we're living people. We have a soul. We have feelings just like the rest of the people of the world. We want to express it and share. I'm so glad that people of the world are using our way of dressing in Alaska, warm boots and warm parkas. Well, that makes us happy because we're sharing what we need when you're living in Alaska. Good thing. And maybe sometimes you will begin to make Eskimo ice cream the way Eskimos did long ago. But then I know from when I was out for nine years, I lost my taste for my own food. I had to learn how to eat dried fish and sea lor, and I lost weight because of that, because I couldn't eat what my folks ate, and my dad and mama were really afraid that I might not live. And it happened that way. It happens with people. A change of food and the way you live affects your health, former health, you know, the way you live, you move elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm going down to basics now that what I'm trying to say is this, that someday in the future, I think our food will be good eating for you because sea law, that's my pet subject. I better not mention sea law.
Go ahead.
No, I just don't have the time. But maybe some other time you can read it in my book, Why Sea Law is Good for People. And just to joke along with my friend, I would say, have some sea law and you'll be warm mama. What I mean by this, you know, you'll be warm whenever you go out skiing. Mm-hmm. And it actually should be put in capsules.
Mm.
So you could take it in the morning when you're going out skiing or hunting or being out, you know.
For people like me who might not like the taste.
Yeah. Well, they wouldn't taste it, you see, if it's put in capsules.
That's an interesting idea.
Uh-huh. Yes, it is. But and then on the other hand, you know, Federal won't let us sell it.
It seems that in going from village to college and back, Emily Brown had a few more things to learn and unlearn.
I bothered every big shot on the campus. They were always so nice to me. When I come in unannounced, you know, mm-hmm. they'd always... I'll sit down and what is it you'd like to talk about? And they were real nice to me every time. But that was not very nice for me. Now I know this was when I was undergraduate, you know. When I took sociology, I found out that in colleges, these professors, you cannot just go up there in their offices and talk to them like the Eskimos do, you know. But boy, I really put myself in place. Because you have to have appointments. We didn't in the past, and the way we live was freedom. We had free social.
So you just went in and talked to them whenever you felt like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, when I first came up in the States, they used to come in without knocking to see my mother or to see me. I'd go in the bedroom and I'd cry. It would be such a shock to me, you know, after I had been outside and came home. Mama used to scold me, and what you crying about anyway? Shame on you. Well, I tell her, I can't you tell these people to knock before they come in, Mom?
So Emily learned to knock on doors. She also learned which are the most important ones to open. She was the main force behind the founding of the Alaska Heritage Writers Association. She did that after she'd already had a long career of teaching.
Why not do something else before you pass on to next world? Something to leave behind so that my people will have something to read about things that have never been written. And that's the purpose of the Alaska Heritage Writers Association. Our member, Pauline Carlos, wrote a book about Nulato. Well, that is good. I feel satisfied, even if just one person remembered to do whatever she was asked to do. And this gives other women a chance to think, well, this is what I could do too. More the merrier in preserving their own culture, you know, like you people have millions and billions of libraries. And you read about your heroes. You read about your leaders of the government. You read about stories. Oh, goodness, name it all. We wouldn't be able to name all what you read about.
Emily Ivanov Brown's work has been to ensure that Alaska's Native people will be able to read about themselves. Her own writing is focused on the Inupiaq heritage, but she doesn't forget that she is part Russian.
When I always said, when I'm mad, not good, my old Russian blood comes out. And when I'm real nice and loving kind, you know, the Eskimo comes out. So I love my own ancestry. My grandfather came from Moscow, and we have relatives over in Moscow. It's too bad that we don't have enough money to go and visit them, huh?
You have to write.
Well, we'll see them up in heaven. That's the only alternative I have.
Your other name is Tikasuk.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's the most interesting Eskimo name. I learned to love my Eskimo name. Whatever I say, I want my own people to hear me when I talk. Love your own Eskimo name, because I love mine. Tikasuk is a hollow in the ground. That's the meaning of my name. And I cried when Mama told me my name was Tikasuk. I said, it's an ugly name, Mom. Why didn't you take it away? And she told me, why, you're named after my cousin, Tikasuk. And tell me more about it, Mom. And she said, why, it means that when all the winds come from the north, south, east, and west, all the wealth of other people come in and lodge in that hollow. And then I learned to like it after she explained to me what it meant. And so I think if you understood, if you had to analyze a word, you would say that your brain is Tikasuk. Because, you know, you put away what you learn in subconscious mind, and then when you talk, it comes out in conscious mind when you're conscious. Well, you have two kinds of thinking. One is to preserve what you learn, and so you could do recalling. You have recalling power, and so it's really a library, you could say. So that hollow is really a library.
And they say, what's in a name? You've been listening to Tikasuk, Emily Ivanoff Brown. I'm Paula Schiller, and this has been Chinook Profiles, a production of KUAC-FM in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan. Welcome to Chinook Echoes. Today, ethnomusicologist Tom Johnston discusses the song and dance of the Yupik-speaking Eskimos with KUAC's Paula Schiller. She asked him to describe a typical performance.
The audience will notice certain very distinct differences between the teams that come from Northwest Alaska, speaking Nupiak, and singing Nupiak, and the dance teams from places like Hooper Bay and Tuxuk Bay and Lackanac, Emanac, Pilot Station, St. Mary's, and so on. In the southwest, the men kneel down. And the dancing is done with the trunk and the shoulders and the arms and the neck and the head. It's all done with a very expressive swaying movement. Whereas in northwest Alaska, it's nearly all done standing, except for the talik, paddling dance done by the women who sit down and pretend, you know, look like they're rowing a boat. The other noticeable thing about southwestern Eskimo dancing is the use of dance fans or circular hoops, which have beautiful feathers on and beadwork. And one kind, there's two different kinds. One kind is used by the men dancers, and one kind is used by the women dancers. There's a slight difference in the construction. They do both have circles of feathers on them. And this represents an interesting extension outwards into space of the arms. And it represents a reaching outwards of the dance motions. So the whole thing is sort of amplified. And may also, reflect the expansive, good-humored Eskimo personality.
So the men are dancing in a kneeling position. Now, women,
sometimes they throw their parka on the floor to make it easier on the knees. You often see them do that.
And the women are dancing standing?
Yes, they generally stand to the side and to the rear of the kneeling men dancers and do similar arm motions. The arm motions are generally in unison, telling the story. The Eskimo dance motions are telling a tale from the past, usually some comic or heroic hunting adventure, or imitating animals, or some legendary figure from the past, some culture hero perhaps, or the sea goddess, or the man in the moon, or the spirits, the hunting spirits from the ocean floor. And the sound of the music also is different in the Southwest. We have heard the music of the Northwest the last time we spoke on this program, and generally it's a very interesting melody that with a wide range that goes all over the place and repeats just twice, the first time softly and the second time loudly. But in Southwest Alaska, we have a different form, a different song structure. The melody is not quite so wide-ranging. It's more monotone, and it's more chant-like. Mm. I guess you could say it's almost more minor key. And it repeats several times with a different set of words. So you have a series of stanzas. You see, verse 1, verse 2, verse 3, verse 4, you might have a whole string of them. The song goes on a long time, which in Northwest Alaska, the songs are very short. And in between each stanza, the drummers play a little drumming interlude. Well, in showbiz, they call it vamp till ready, you know, and the piano player just goes chop, chop, chop until the dancers are ready. And during this little interlude in between the verses, some leader or song composer, he may call out remarks, humorous remarks to the audience, or he might try to make them laugh or sneeze or something like that, or he may cue them as to the words that are coming to remind them in case they've forgotten, or he might give them a little rundown on the story, or a little fill-in between what happened in the last verse and what's going to happen in the next verse.
Sounds like vaudeville.
Yes, of course, it's asking about vaudeville. That's certainly what it is. We could listen to an example. Eskimo villagers themselves will very quickly distinguish between the sound of the dance songs from Southwest Alaska and the sound of the songs from Northwest Alaska. But it's very hard for me to describe in words what that difference is. But you may have noticed how they kept returning to that same one note, that note that sort of drives right through to your mind. And also the way that the singers swoop up to another plateau and then fall off and swoop back down again. It's very distinctive, and after you've been listening to Alaskan Eskimo music from the different regions, from the different areas, for a while, you get so that you do recognize the distinction between the Southwest and the Northwest.
Is it just my ear, or maybe it was the minor key in that song that made it sound a little mystical and melancholy?
Mm-hmm.
Is that
yes,
typical?
It's typical, although of course it's ethnocentric to describe it as minor key, because in our culture we have major key for happy songs and minor key for sad songs, and that doesn't really apply. They have that same minor key sound for all of their songs.
So that wasn't necessarily a sad song.
May have been hilariously funny.
The other thing I noticed about that may have been slightly different is that the drum rhythm was regular. It wasn't an offbeat or a 7/8 or whatever we had.
That was
before.
Just that one particular song. they do use the same interesting drum rhythms in the south of Unalakleet. That's the dividing line between the two language areas. South of Unalakleet, they do have the same interesting 7/8 and 5/8 rhythms as they do in Northwest. This just happened to be a song with a simple drum rhythm.
Well, one thing I'm curious about, and it's going to be hard to describe on radio, but what are the differences in the men's and in women's fans? Are they just one bigger than the other?
Some of the dance fans are woven with beadwork on and snow owl feathers. Others are made of carved, painted wooden hoops with eaglet feathers and beaded. And the Eskimo people that make them have different names for the different styles of dance bands.
Another question about men and women. Is it only the men who are drummers, or do women drum?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think mostly it's the men who do the drumming. It's the men who go whaling, for instance. So it's the men that get the peritoneum, that beautiful transparent membrane that's very strong, that covers the lining of the stomach of the walrus or the whale. And it's the men who have woodworking skills from building their boats. And so it's generally the man who makes the drum, that owns the drum, and plays the drum.
The
drummers will sing, the audience will sing, but the dancers will never sing. They're just busy doing their dancing and doing their motions. But I have seen women drumming. Dinah Frankson at Point Hope, she drums. When Wainwright dance team came down to Fairbanks and did the box drum dance, they had one of their beautiful woman dancers playing the box drum. So it's not a taboo.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happens that mostly it's the men who do the drumming.
I think there is a difference also in the drumming techniques used between Southwest and Northwest.
That's right. You've probably noticed, as many people have, that in the Northwest, the drums are tapped on the rim from underneath, very lightly, with a long wand that's longer than the diameter of the two rims. But in the Southwest, the drums are much larger and are beaten on top, also with a long wand, very vigorously from the top of the drum. And in the Southwest, they've taken to heavy plastic material rather than using the... I guess you still can find membrane drums in the Southwest, but mostly in the villages, you find that they are using... For instance, you can see the black plastic in movies and films and slides and things that various travelers and teachers and that bring back from the outlying villages, and certainly the villages that I've been to, like Tuxuk Bay, they use plastic on the drums. This may reflect the fact that in the Northwest there are more whales available, and it wasn't long ago, for instance, that one of the villages up there caught 14 whales in one season. That's not so common down in the Southwest, and the plastic makes a very useful substitute.
Does it sound very much different, or is it an acceptable sound?
Well, one advantage of it is you don't have to keep wetting it. It doesn't dry out and crack like the natural material does, but it doesn't have a good sound, no.
Mm.
And when Chivak dancers came here, they brought a large membrane drum, and it was old, and it had begun to crack. And one of the men took out the skin of a blackfish out of his pocket and stitched the blackfish patch onto the membrane drum and repaired it. And I asked him what he was doing, and he says, yes, he says, blackfish comes in handy for making these little repair jobs.
Professor Tom Johnston, ethnomusicologist. You've been listening to Chinook Echoes, a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.